Welcome to Our Blue Bahamas, the podcast exploring the people and science shaping the future of our ocean nation. I am your host, Jasmine Colley. In this Fish for Our Future edition, we're diving into the world of sharks, powerful predators that play a critical role in healthy marine ecosystems in the Bahamas blue economy. Joining us today, we have a very special guest, Dr. Candice Fields, a NASA native and marine scientist. She has extensive work focusing on these large marine predators. We're also here with our very own Heather Brockbank, our outreach and education of our outreach officer at Brief. Just to get started, Dr. Fields, it's a pleasure to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your history with sharks.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me today. I'm very pleased to be invited for these opportunities. It's always good to share my story and share any information about sharks so that hopefully we can shift our perception from fear to fact and get sort of the real information about these animals and why they play a key role in our ecosystem and in our economy in the Bahamas.
Wonderful. When people hear sharks, you know, it's as Bahamians, you know, we know what type of conversation comes up. Mm-hmm. But what drew you to start studying and learning about sharks?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, not only here in the Bahamas, but globally, when you think shark, you're thinking jaws, you're thinking, you know, big predator, you're thinking scary, you're thinking something that might bite you. And I think that in a way, that's something that drew me in to studying them, but almost from the other perspective or from the other angle, where I wanted to understand them for myself, right? A lot of what people know or understand or think they understand about sharks comes from the media or some sort of outside perspective, right? It's not a perspective that you've gained for yourself. And so I think I was always fascinated by these animals, fascinated by why, you know, these things that I have never personally witnessed do anything bad. I've never witnessed a negative encounter. You know, of course, I know that they exist. To understand why, for myself, you know, what is the big deal? What is really going on, and what sort of drives the behavior of these animals?
Thank you. That's so interesting. And Heather, I want to rope you into this. You know, we at Brief, we have a lot of experiential programs where we're taking kids into the water. So what do you think generally the perception is of sharks in the Bahamas when we do take these kids out?
Yeah, like Candice would have said, one thing I will note is that you don't really mention sharks when you're in the water with kids. That's one primary rule. Because then they're like, sharks, where? And then it causes a whole confusion. So we lay down the expectation of safety with our students. You know, we tell them to be mindful of what you're doing in the water, look out for your buddy and things like that. But when it comes to topics that might distract them from the lesson at hand, we tend to steer away from it unless it's the lesson that's being taught. And we do think that it is an important lesson to teach students to be mindful of your area when you're in the water, but not that sharks are out there to get you, you know? And so we definitely, at Brief, when we teach about sharks and ecosystems, we don't teach sharks from a perspective of fear. We like to ensure students know that sharks, we need sharks in our oceans. They ensure that they're healthy. And so just straying away from an origin of fear, but kind of making it something that they're interested in and build those inquisitive thoughts in their brains.
Definitely.
And could I just piggyback off of that as well? I think, you know, interestingly, when you're talking about kids, especially younger kids, that fear is not necessarily in them yet, right? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of goes to show how this is a trained or a taught thing, because, you know, I do a lot of outreach with an organization called Sharks for Kids, and we go into schools and do lessons on sharks and different things and do field trips and all these things. And most of the time, especially the younger the kid, when you talk about sharks, it's just immense excitement. And you, like she was saying, it's and distracting because so they're just like, woo, you know. But as we age and we're getting exposed to these different opinions, when we're getting exposed to media, we're getting exposed to all these negative perceptions, that is when you start to see that shift, and you have to start to really work to get people on board with sharks and shark conservation.
So, well, what would you say, at both of you, is the most unforgettable experience you've had in the field or a moment when sharks really surprised you? I'm going to go with you, Heather, first.
Well, I'm going to recall my first encounter with sharks, which is when I was getting certified to dive. And so two new experiences at once, it was a little bit jarring. But from my background, I already knew I wanted to pursue marine science. So I came in, again, with that thought, not of fear, but like, this is something that would be so cool and so such a great opportunity if I got to experience it. And on this particular dive, I didn't expect to see it. And it was just a nurse shark, but it was such a cool opportunity to actually witness a shark meet and you in the water on his playing fields, you know? And so after that, I was even more interested in learning what I could learn more about sharks.
Yeah, I feel like that's a common thing, is that when, you know, a lot of people who have these perceptions of sharks have never or don't wish to, for whatever reason, been in that shark's realm, right, and had that experience of I'm snorkeling or swimming or something, and I'm able to just watch the shark do its own thing in its environment and swim by, and you kind of just, you can feel its power, you can feel, you know, that it is in the top tier of the ecosystem, but you also see that it can be gentle and docile and very majestic. So my most memorable shark experience was in 2020. So obviously that was a great time in the world for everyone. Things had pretty much shut down. I was working at the Cape Luther Institute and sort of just waiting to get back to Nassau because everything had shut down. And we were able to do a trip with a group called Shark Explorers Bahamas, a group that runs great diving operations on a liveaboard boat. And we were able to do some research with their assistance. And we went to Cat Island to look for oceanic white tips, which is a shark that I studied heavily in my PhD. But the most exciting thing there was we were actually kind of just waiting around to get something mailed that we knew wasn't going to arrive, but the people were pressing. And we ended up seeing some birds, and typically, you know, when you see birds working, that means there's some good fish activity in the water. And so we went over there, and one of the guys was a film guy, so he said, I'll get in with this bait ball. And when he got in, you just hear through the snorkel, like, right? And he looks up and he just goes, it's a whale shark, right?
Wow.
And so we're all pumped. We're all, like, trying to throw ourselves into the water. But we're like, okay, we need to, like, simmer down. The whale shark dives down. We're all like, oh, no, we missed it. But then, like, 15 minutes later, it came back up. And we were all able to swim in, you know, the beautiful clear water of the Bahamas. It was off of Cat Island. You know, it was feeding at the surface. There was tons of birds diving and tunas jumping. And, you know, at a certain point, someone else had to say, don't forget about the other sharks, because you just lost yourself in this whale shark. And it was definitely one of the most cool experiences I've had. And it's one of those things where, you know, there are places in the world you can go, like in Mexico and stuff, to see whale sharks when they're in their certain parts of their migration. But there's something about when the ocean just sort of gifts you with an encounter that's
right
not,
in our,
you know,
backyard.
Right in our backyard. Yes. And that you're not trying to get there on purpose, right? Of course, that those purposeful ones are awesome too. Mm-hmm. But when something just comes up and shocks you and you just get to see the ocean in all its glory, it's amazing. And that was definitely one of my most memorable shark experiences.
And I just think it's so important that we have these firsthand experiences with sharks so we can communicate it to the next generation. You know, a lot of persons are like, have you ever seen a shark? And I actually had an opportunity last summer at the Cape Elutra Institute to actually catch a baby shark. And it was, and you know, just showing that and one of the experiences we had, we went in a canal hoping that we'd see some sharks, you know, and actually being intentional on even going on shark dives and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And being able to communicate that, you know, it has like a little, I would say like a paradigm shift for some people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so, so, so important. And that just leads on to my next question. So what you think is the biggest misconception people have about sharks and that your research challenges?
So I think in terms of the Bahamas, one of the biggest misconceptions that we face is that the implementation and declaration of the Bahamas Shark Sanctuary, which happened in 2011, sort of created this population boom, right? Created, now there's too many sharks, the sharks are everywhere, and that's because we're conserving them. And, you know, my research directly sort of dispels that. I did some work assessing shark populations. Obviously, the main shark that we saw was Caribbean reef sharks. That's the most prolific, besides things like nurse sharks that no one's really concerned about, across our archipelago. And so the data actually showed that from between 2015 and 17, and then between 2023 and 24, there was no significant difference between the numbers of sharks, of Caribbean reef sharks, of tiger sharks, of a variety of different species that I was able to look at. And so that is, I think, speaks to the fact that these sort of anecdotal right. responses of, you know, well, when my grandfather was out here fishing, this and that and the other thing, or, you know, even 20 years ago, this wasn't the same thing. It speaks to more than just that there are more sharks, because, again, the data doesn't support that, right? It speaks to the fact that, you know, there's also more people fishing out there, right? There's also fish population depletion, right? And so just the same way that the fishermen are fighting these declines, the sharks are fighting it as well, right? And so just as any intelligent being would do, and sharks are smart individuals, they can learn. They can create memory and all these things. That's why you see sharks in marinas and all this stuff. Is that if I know that at this spot, you know, because every fisherman has their little honey hole or whatever, right? If I know that at this spot I'll probably get a easier meal, the shark is going to sort of condition itself or become conditioned to keep checking that area out, right? And so, again, I think, like I said, the data that I saw for that specific work does not support the perception that there's this sort of explosion of sharks. And it really is important to highlight that even though we do have a healthy population of sharks, it is stable. It's not sort of doing all these upward fluctuations. And stability in the Bahamas is a big deal, because that is not the case globally, right? Mm-hmm. And shark conservation is something that we as a small island nation, a developing nation, we are at the forefront, right? And to be this little tiny country and to be at the forefront of something is a big deal. And so this is not something we should be trying to shy away from or to repeal or pull back on. It's something that we should be proud and be shouting from the rooftops that this is what we have, because we are able to be a bright spot for sharks in the world.
I think it's so important, the work that you're doing, because, you know, especially, you know, we're having a global decrease of fish stocks, and persons are saying, you know, the sharks are the reason why the fish stocks are low. And, you know, and having the research to say that, hey, we're protecting the sharks, but there wasn't this explosive boom. You know, the science says that, you know. And I think that's so important when it's influencing policies, because I remember persons were saying that we should lift this band and all mm-hmm. of that. So I really think, you know, it all goes back to the science. And I really appreciate that. And, you know, just something that you said. So we know that we're in an age facing climate change, mm-hmm. right? So is that changing any of the sharks' behavior? Like you say, they're very intelligent animals. They know where the fish stocks are. They know the sweet spots. But we're feeling it on land. We know the ocean is being impacted in so many different ways. Our mm-hmm. coral reefs, coral bleaching. Mm-hmm. So how is that changing the behavior of sharks?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, the interesting thing about sharks is that there are so many sharks in the water, you know, over 500 species, and there's still so little that we know about sharks, right? We know only little bits about sharks that are quote unquote easy to study. And when I say that, I mean in terms of accessibility and stuff like that. But again, these are animals that are typically wide ranging. You know, people feel like sharks are everywhere, but I've been out in the field and, you know, you're spending 6-8 hours trying intentionally to catch a shark and nothing, right? So I think that again, that just plays to the previous question that, you know, the sharks are not necessarily exploding. But in terms of climate change, you know, these animals have things like temperature thresholds, right? They cannot withstand ranges outside of, you know, certain warm temperatures and also certain cool temperatures. The same way that if we are, we're put into a freezing situation, if we didn't have the appropriate clothes and all that stuff, we would not survive, right? And so these sharks are shifting their migration patterns, and we're seeing that there, some sharks are, you know, heading more north than they have in the past because those waters are now more inhabitable than they were in the past. Their timing of their migrations is different, right? Because the temperature drops or warming is coming earlier or later. So the sharks are changing their migration in that way. Some animals are likely going deeper to find that cooler water. So there's a variety of things, but because this is still such a sort of burgeoning issue, an issue that we don't really have a great grasp on as a whole, it's going to be an ever-growing and ever-changing situation, and we're going to have to continue to study the impacts of this change as time goes on. But, you know, for example, the things like coral bleaching, all these things, sharks that are reef-associated are obviously going to be impacted, right? Right. Those species, prey species for them that are now no longer in that area, that's a problem, right? That can, and again, can be a reason why these animals are moving, right? Because, you know, besides temperature and things like this, they need to eat, right? So they're going to follow the fish, and if the fish are moving, the sharks are moving.
And so what does that mean for our local ecosystems? We're really in the tropics. We're in the tropics. So what does, and we're one of those regions that actually protect sharks. Mm-hmm. And they're moving possibly more out of our waters. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for our fishing community?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the I guess upside, so to speak, is that these changes are not going to happen in the blink of an eye, right? These are things that are going to happen over decades, and hopefully as time goes on, we'll be able to continue doing work that will be able to come up with solutions to some of these issues, right? To understand these movements better, to understand these shifts better, and be able to better predict these things so that fishermen, especially whose livelihood depends on successful or healthy ecosystems and fish stocks, can still do so even in a changing environment. And so I think really the key is to support research efforts as much as possible, whether that is from volunteering, from donating, from, you know, every little thing makes a difference, you know, and I know people feel like, you know, times are tough, and of course that is the case. You know, this is 2026 is not an easy time to live. But every dollar counts, you know. $1 can make you be able to buy a hook or buy something that can make a big difference, even though it might not feel that way. So I think, you know, in this ever-changing ecosystem and environment, we have to really push more and push harder now more than ever to continue doing this work, and try to push for government support, push for non-government support, because the more we know, the better that we will be position we will be in. And the health of our ecosystems is not only important for environmental perspective, but also economic, right? The shark diving industry or shark ecotourism industry provides over $100 million annually, right? U.S. dollars annually. And so with the loss of that, you know, on top of all of the negative ecosystem consequences, that would be a major economic blow as well. Mm-hmm. And even just beyond the shark tourism on purpose, you know, sharks are important parts of the ecosystem. The ocean and the earth requires balance, and the balance obviously included sharks, right, before we started to alter the ecosystem. And as a nation that relies heavily on tourism, and tourism that is ocean-based, if we do not protect these resources, we will be in a big negative situation.
And Heva, I heard you said it, but it looks like you want to say something.
I love the point you just made. I wanted to start with that. And I really think that bringing up sharks as an issue, the Bahamians feel is a urgent issue, is really connecting it back to how it affects them. And so that's why I'm glad you spoke about our tourism economy and how it will affect that. And I want to ask you, if we were to see a decline in the shark fisheries, what would that look like for a future for local Bahamians and fisheries and possibly our tourism industry? Would fishery prices go up? Would they go down? What would we see?
I mean, I think that there's a variety of options, right? Because we have a plethora of different species in the Bahamas, and different species impact the environment differently. Mm-hmm. And different species also draw in tourism differently for that diving specific situation, right? So there are people who are coming here specifically to dive with great hammerhead sharks and tiger sharks, right? And that happens at two main locations. If we got to a position where those sharks were not in those areas, that industry would basically die out, right? That would create a problem for people's livelihoods, and for a variety of sectors, right? Not just the people working in the tourism, but the people this diving, but hotels, food, restaurants. You know, these people have to eat somewhere. They have to stay somewhere. You would see assumedly less flight bookings. All these things make a big difference, right? And I think that that's something that is not often factored in. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, the ecosystem, I think that there's a great sort of misconception that if we got rid of all the sharks, things would be amazing for fishermen, right? Because, great, there's no sharks, I have no competition, right, besides other fishermen. And that might be the case for a little bit, right, a year, a couple of years. But remember now that again, these ecosystems require balance.
Right.
And so without these predators to do what we call sort of indirect effects on prey species, right? So there's direct effects, which is consumption, eating the fish. But there's indirect effects where they basically have to weigh the risk versus the reward of going to feed out on this patch of seagrass or feed on this reef because they know that they might get eaten, right? If they don't have that capacity, if they don't have that aspect, the population of that sort of next level down species is going to boom, and that's going to be great again for a little bit. But then their prey species is going to get depleted because why? They're going to have no predator to wipe them out, and it's going to keep trickling down.
Right.
down. And so you don't think about the fact that the loss of tiger sharks could impact conch. Right? Because tiger sharks eat sea turtles. Sea turtles feed on seagrass, and conch needs like seagrass beds, right? All these things, conch, lobster, crabs.
Right.
And so when you take away the tiger shark, the turtles don't have to hedge their bets and say, no, let me stay in this close patch, even though over there might have the most nutrition and all this stuff. And so they'll be able to wipe out the resource that's needed for these other lower level species, right? And so all these things, like I said, it's because of this balance that we are able to have the fisheries that we have. And so you think about sharks as getting rid of them and now we're safe and, you know, there's no threat to the fish. But it'll cause a major trickle-down effect that I think people don't think about often.
So what you're saying is, and I want you guys to listen, that if we don't have the sharks, that is actually going to be negative for our fisheries industry overall. And I just loved how you just described that, you know, that although we're just thinking about the sharks, but we're not thinking about the turtles and how it affects the seagrass beds and how that relationship affects the conch. And listen, as a Bahamian, you know, I would go,
messing with the conch.
You can't mess with our conch. And then Bahamian also even conch. With our snappers and all of that and all those different trophic levels, mm-hmm. and all those food webs and all that interconnectivity within the ocean. So I just really, really want to stress that point that our sharks are really, really important for our own food security.
Yes.
And so, you know, when we think about the Bahamas as this marine sanctuary, like how good has it been, you know, in protecting sharks and supporting tourism? Is that, I mean, as compared to possibly other nations, places where sharks are not protected? So could you speak a little more on that?
Yeah, so shark sanctuaries are one of a myriad of different conservation strategies to protect and preserve sharks for generations to come. And we have seen that there have been successes of the sanctuaries in terms of species diversity, but most importantly, species abundance, right? The amount of sharks. And you can see clearly, too, that there's a difference of the abundance within shark sanctuaries and outside of shark sanctuaries. Mm. The interesting thing about the Bahamas Shark Sanctuary is that really the protections for sharks really started a long time prior to the 2011 designation.
Okay.
Because in 1993, there was a ban on sort of commercial longlining, right? And in commercial longlines, you have a boat that puts out thousands of hooks. They're gonna set and forget, right? They're not trying to make sure that the stuff that they're not trying to catch doesn't die, right? So there's a lot of the issue of what we call bycatch. So anything that is captured incidentally. So if they're out there trying to catch tuna, anything that's not a tuna that they caught is bycatch.
Right.
And so sharks are very, very prone to being caught as bycatch and dying because of it. So there's a lot of fisheries-related mortality with sharks. And so the elimination of that commercial longlining really mitigated that bycatch issue and really lowered the amount of shark death that we had. So that was in 1993. And the, you know, things are looking pretty stable since then to now, right? The changes that we're seeing are not anything major over the course of that, you know, multi-decade period. And so the Bahamas, like I said, is a front runner in shark conservation. And I hope that we continue to do so. And the sanctuary itself is a good way for nations like ourselves that don't have, you know, immense enforcement capacity, right? There's a lot of water in our jurisdiction.
About 98%.
And not a lot of people to monitor it.
Right.
And so in having sort of a blanket protection, we know that all sharks cannot be caught, right? And so if someone sees somebody catching a shark, they don't have to go, oh, but I don't know, because maybe that's a reef shark and reef sharks could get caught and this and that, the other thing. And so, you know, there's a lot of criticisms of shark sanctuaries, and some of them are that, you know, there's can be weak enforcement. But I think that in a way, when you have a limited capacity to enforce, you need to have a more broad reach. And that's what the shark sanctuary does.
So what challenges you think remain still since we, even though we have these policies that protect sharks?
The challenge remains to keep people on board with continuing the protection, right? Conservation is a game of offense until there's a success, right? Conservation success means that you're now on defense forever to try to maintain that success story. And so the biggest struggle now will be to continue to get people on board to understand why shark conservation is important, why the Bahamas Shark Sanctuary is important, why we should have sharks in our oceans. And that's not to say that we should try to be telling people, like, don't be afraid of sharks. You know, fear is not something that can often be controlled, right? But you can fear something while still respecting it. Mm-hmm. And you can fear something while still understanding that it is an important part of our existence. And so that's really what my goal is with my outreach work and all these things. And so I hope that I can continue to be an advocate for sharks and also rays. We can't forget about the rays, which are, you know, the shark cousins out
yes,
there.
Yes, yes.
But they don't have this big, scary perception. But I just hope that we can continue doing the important work that we need to do to maintain the shark sanctuary for years to come. And I hope that, you know, my research will continue to influence data-driven policy decisions.
Wonderful. Just before we wrap up, I need to ask both of you, what everyday choices, you know, young people, persons listening in right now, can make to support healthy oceans, and how they can use their voice to influence change?
Heather, you wanna? Been talking a lot.
Yeah, so in terms of young people, just get involved. We have Brief here as an asset, BNT, if you're more interested in the terrestrial side of supporting our oceans and support our mangroves, with all of the restoration work that's going on so far. And then next, educate yourself, do a little Google search, become aware of what issues are facing the Bahamas today, and then see how you can get involved either in your community groups or even in your school groups if there's an eco club.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can make everyday choices that are beneficial. You know, you can use your a reusable water bottle, right? Don't get the plastic water bottles, and encourage other people to do so. Skip the plastic bag. Thankfully, in the Bahamas, we don't really have that problem. But, you know, don't get your plastic bag. Don't get things in styrofoam. All these things, it seems small, but it makes a big difference. And I think the most important is, like I think you mentioned, is to use your voice, right? It only takes one person. You know, I always say when I do school visits, if I only reached one kid in that class of 50, that's a big deal, because now they're going to go home and hopefully continue to reach one more person and reach one more person, reach one more person. Mm-hmm. So don't shy away from your passion, whether that's sharks, whether that is conch, the oceanography, whatever. Make your voice heard and make people understand that what you care about is important. My family probably couldn't care less about sharks, or only cared in a negative way before, and now they're talking about sharks left, right, and center, right? Because it's important to me. So the people who you love and who are important to you will hopefully promote your wants and your dreams. And if conservation is one of them, then we salute you.
And thank you so much, Dr. Fields, for having you talk about sharks. And Heather, amazing. And I know this conversation is going to go far. And what we really, really want to say to all our listeners is, you know, continue to follow the conversation. You can get involved at Brief. You can follow us on our social media at Brief242. That's at BREEF 242. And that wraps up our episode on sharks, and a little spin-off edition from our Fish for the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You'll be back, same time, same place, at our Blue Bahamas.